Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Today you'll hear about the Exit Theater production of Some Things You Need to Know Before the World Ends, A Final Evening with the Illuminati, from actor-director Harvey T. Jordan and his co-star, Hugo Francisco Martinez. Vietnamese instrumentalist Van An Vo returns to Open Air to talk about her participation in the third annual Kronos Festival 2017, which focuses on the celebrated quartet's relationships with San Francisco Bay Area composers, arrangers, and musicians from many corners of the musical landscape. Director Martin Sanangelo, guitarist Eugenio Iglesias, and singer Manuel Gago discuss Noche Flamenca's evening-length work, Antígona, based on the Sophocles play, which will be playing at Z-Space in San Francisco. Peter Robinson shares details about the Mostly British Film Festival, and I'll give you a brief overview of the opening offerings of the San Francisco ballet season currently underway. Stay with us. After a 10-year hiatus, the critically acclaimed American Blues Theater Company returns with its 29th production, a revival of its 2003 sellout, Some Things You Need to Know Before the World Ends, A Final Evening with the Illuminati. It's by Larry Larson and Levi Lee, being staged at the Exit Theater. Since 1999, the American Blues Theater Company has delivered powerful theater in intimate settings, garnering numerous regional theater nominations and several awards in acting, directing, and production design. Illuminati director and star Harvey T. Jordan joins me in studio. Harvey has performed with numerous regional theaters around the country, including Chicago Steppenwolf Theater, Capitol Stage in Sacramento, Minnesota Rep, Davis Shakespeare Ensemble, among many others, and has acted and directed with the American Blues Theater Company, for which he is founding artistic director. He also served as an artist in residence for the Pacific Conservatory of the Performing Arts. Harvey, welcome to Open Air.
Hey, thank you, David.
He's joined by his co-star, Hugo Francisco Martinez, who plays Brother Lawrence. Last year, Hugo directed his rock and roll interpretation of Eric Bogosian's Talk Radio at Stage 3 Theater Company in Sonora, for which he was awarded Best Director of a Drama by the Sacramento Area Regional Theater Alliance. In addition to this role as Brother Lawrence, he won acclaim as the Friar Lawrence in a 2014 production of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Diverse roles include Leo Bloom and the Producers, Martini and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Senex, and A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Hugo, welcome to you.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, Harvey, I just love the description of the show. In a post-apocalyptic bunker sanctuary, a lone keeper of the flame presides. Aging hippie survivalist Reverend Eddie, that's you, who denounces the secretive, omnipresent, and mind-controlling Illuminati. And with the help of his last remaining acolyte, the hunchback Brother Lawrence, Reverend Eddie celebrates his quixotic devotion by preparing for his final test of faith, a one-on-one basketball game with the Grim Reaper. It just invites your imagination to run wild.
It does, yes.
Now, this was just done up in Stockton at the University of Pacific last month. How did that production go over?
Yeah, we originally, American Blues Theater Company, did a production of this show in 2003, as you'd said. And when we revived it, we decided to rehearse it and perform it briefly there in Stockton and then bring it to San Francisco. So it ran for 2 weekends at the in the Studio Theater at the University of the Pacific. It's kind of our out-of-town tryout.
There you go. Regional, yeah. So you mentioned it was originally done in 2003. Any changes from the 2003 production?
Some minor changes. Yeah, you always. There have been times in my career where I've had an opportunity to do a show again, redirect a show again, and I found that they always accelerate forward because you suddenly get a chance to go back and fix things that you you know, you decided through the run, hey, you know, we could tweak this up a little bit. We could take it another direction. So we did make a few directions. And Hugo as Brother Lawrence is not the same actor who had played Hugo 13 years ago. So we made changes, of course, based on his interpretations.
Mm-hmm. Now, this was obviously planned well before the results of the November election, considering this is a 2003 production. I'm wondering, after this election was made manifest, has the approach to the play changed at all?
No. But, yeah, there have been a number of people who will see, you know, I guess it depends on what you want to see or whether you see it or not, but some people do see some connections. I myself, I'm approaching the show without any kind of political agenda, without mm-hmm. any agenda about religion or any of that sort of thing.
That apocalypse could happen during any administration.
It certainly could.
Well, it's mentioned post-apocalypse and a quixotic quest that's going on here. Would it be fair to call you guys, in addition to Reverend Eddie and Friar Lawrence, Brother Lawrence, a kind of Quixote and Sancho Panza?
I totally saw that in the show, particularly redoing it this second time around. I thought, you know, this feels very much like Quixote and Sancho in a way. That, you know, Sancho, Brother Lawrence character has a kind of a very sweet sort of faithfulness, and Reverend Eddie in a Quixote-like way, he's a little crazy, and he's always fighting battles, whether they are real or imaginary.
So do we know what caused the apocalypse? Is it all in his mind, and how did the Illuminati come into it?
It was interesting. I had the feeling that question might come up even just now. I was just thinking that before or on the way here, and I was thinking the script actually doesn't specify anything. There is some mention at some point to parishioners dying off because of nerve gas. That's the only thing that is mentioned in the script. But there's no discussion about whatever caused this kind of, him to retreat into this post-apocalyptic bunker sanctuary that he's in.
Do we know if there are any other survivors? Are they
well, there is the audience actually becomes his parishioners during the show. There's actually a fairly goodly amount of kind of non-challenging, non-threatening audience involvement. The audience is addressed as the parishioners many times during portions of the show where he's giving sermons and whatnot. He's talking to them. In fact, at times even scolds them about things. We actually physically interact a little bit with the audience. Again, none of it is challenging or threatening or imposing in any way on the audience.
Hugo Martinez, Harvey mentioned that he doesn't read any particular political landscape into this. How about you?
Well, there's definitely moments in the show where, you know, especially with everything that's going on and with this, you know, current administration, definitely that I can make some connections to it. But I don't read too much into it just because I'm doing it purely out of the entertainment aspect of it. It's a fun show. It's a fast, fun-paced, and it's a good show to watch because it's, you know, you're in, you're out, and you just have a good time. So I don't really read into
fun-paced.
It.
It's fun-paced.
It's fun-paced. No, I loved, yeah, the pacing is wild, so it's very fun-paced.
Do you sense the audience reading into it a little bit, if you're not?
They might. I would think these days, people will read political perspective into
about everything.
So,
yeah.
And you know, they're certainly welcome to look into it any way they want. We definitely have much proselytizing and bombast from Reverend Eddie.
Mm-hmm. We're calling this avant-garde along the lines of absurdist a la Sam Beckett or not so much?
No. I mean, it has absurdist elements. It has avant-garde elements. It's kind of it's so comic and so sort of entertainment-oriented, though. It almost defies description. I have to say I've been in the theater since 1970. I've never seen any other piece of theater like this. With bits of improvisation mixed in, audience involvement mixed in. There's even musical numbers. The Reverend Eddie sings a few times in the show, and it's loaded with things you will never see ever again on the theater. It's unique.
Well, let's have a little taste of it, shall we? You offer us a scene.
Yeah, we can do a little.
Here's Harvey Jordan as Reverend Eddie and Hugo Martinez as Brother Lawrence in an excerpt from Some Things You Need to Know Before the World Ends, A Final Evening with the Illuminati.
Lawrence, do you believe in the devil?
Which one? The one that tempted Christ or the one who gave Job so much trouble?
They're both the same devil. How many devils do you think there are?
Uno.
I'll tell you how many there are. One devil, one God, one bishop, one church. Lawrence, come here. I want to tell you something. Lawrence, I'm worried about you.
Me, senor?
We're in a battle with Satan, Lawrence. Both of us. He's testing our faith. I'm not worried about myself because I'm strong. The church will protect me. But you don't know enough about the church and its laws to receive that protection. That's why I've been trying to teach you.
Oh, pues I appreciate that, senor.
Do you remember how Satan tempted Christ on that mountain in the desert?
He took him up on the mountain and showed him a vision of the world.
That's right. A vision. He showed him a vision like your vision.
The space lady.
No, I meant that metaphysically. Don't you see what that means, Lawrence? You're not important enough for the devil to fool with. You're laity. Lay people don't have visions. Don't you see he's trying to get to me through you, through visions and holding out this foolish hope of being healed?
So I won't be healed?
Of course not. That's the devil's promise.
I thought that was a state park in Montana.
I'm talking about the devil, Lawrence. Satan. Beelzebub. The beast. He's trying to make us think we see things. Spanish-speaking women in silver lamé jumpsuits.
The space lady.
Spaceships. Country music singers.
I don't remember country music singers.
He's got a hold of us. Trying to make us doubt. Trying to make us think we're dying.
I feel fine.
To separate us from the one true church. Oh, I've seen his hand at work. Trust me on this. He's taking bets on which way I'll fall. Altering my image in the mirror. Stalling my car. Losing my socks. Tampering with my credit rating. Revoking my driver's license. Forgetting my birthday. Sending me junk mail. I am not an occupant. I am a man.
Harvey Jordan as the Reverend Eddie and Hugo Martinez as Brother Lawrence in that excerpt from the play Some Things You Need to Know Before the World Ends, A Final Evening with the Illuminati. It's a play by Larry Larson and Levi Lee being staged at the Exit Theater now through the 18th, the Exit stage left at 156 Eddy Street. That's some great stuff. Beautifully acted.
Thank you very much.
Could be a wonderful radio play, too, for that matter.
You know what? I wonder. There's an awful lot of visual stuff, though, which you would miss in a radio play, but that could very well be.
Well, speaking of the visual, what's with the one-on-one basketball game? How does a basketball game with the Grim Reaper come into play?
Reverend Eddie creates sermons, and he's working on one at the beginning of the show, and the sermon he's working on is one that he's had a vision, I guess, for, or an idea for, and it's called Life is Like a Basketball Game. And so all through there's little basketball references and whatnot. And then, in fact, when the play begins, he appears to be in a vision threatened by the Grim Reaper holding a basketball above his head like to execute him or kill him. And at the very end of the play, they actually play one-on-one basketball. And, of course, Reverend Eddie trash talks death.
Yeah, that's the best part.
That's great. Well, congratulations on the reemergence of the American Blues Theater Company. What's coming up next for the company?
Well, we don't know. We're floating this out. This was the partially the suggestion and idea and brainchild of former American Blues Theater Company member Damar Arsanis, who's now serving as producer of the show. And we talked about she lives here in San Francisco, and she thought, wouldn't it be great to have some American Blues work perform in San Francisco? So that's where that idea originated, and we developed it from there.
Fantastic.
So we're sort of floating this balloon out.
Sure, and you've got a great spot for the float at the Exit Theater on Eddy Street. Once again, it's through the 18th. Exit stage left is at 156 Eddy Street. More information about Some Things You Need to Know Before the World Ends, A Final Evening with the Illuminati by Larry Larson and Levi Lee, starring Harvey Jordan and Hugo Martinez, is at the Exit's website, theexit.org/some, S-O-M-E. Thanks so much for coming in, gentlemen. Looking forward to the show.
Thank you, David.
Thank
great.
You.
Tonight through Sunday, the Kronos Quartet, an umbrella organization, the Kronos Performing Arts Association, will present its third annual Hometown Music Festival, Kronos Festival 2017, here and now at SF Jazz here in San Francisco. With six concerts over 3 days, the festival focuses on Kronos' relationship with San Francisco Bay Area composers, arrangers, and musicians from many corners of the musical landscape, as well as the huge energetic promise of local students. A thread woven through the festival is Kronos' 50 for the Future education initiative, which is commissioning and distributing for free a learning library of contemporary repertoire for a quartet. Performances will feature some of the region's most engaging composers, from minimalism pioneer Terry Riley to the renowned Indian violinist Kala Ramnath, and transcendent guest musicians from the breathtaking Persian singer Masa Vadat to the ethereal sounds of traditional Vietnamese instrumentalist Van An Vo, who is my guest in studio today. I last spoke with Van An last year when she presented her multimedia show that explores the journeys of Vietnamese boat people. In addition to touring internationally, Van An has presented her music at Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, Kennedy Center, and as a composer and guest artist for the Kronos Quartet at the Olympic Games 2012 Music Festival. She also co-composed the 2009 Emmy Award-winning soundtrack for the documentary Bolinao 52, which told the story of one of the Vietnamese boat people journeys, where only 52 souls out of an initial 110 or so survived. Recently, she released her third CD, Three Mountain Pass, with the Kronos Quartet as her guest artists. Van An, welcome back to Open Air.
Yeah, hi, hello, David, and everyone.
Well, a very fruitful relationship you've developed with the Kronos Quartet. Tell us how it started.
It's this very, I have been a fan of Kronos for many years, but in 2010, I came to their concerts in Stanford University, and they present the piece about 9/11. And I was so moved, and, because I came from a country that torn between wars. So after the concert, I told myself that I should have to take my courage and go to meet any of the, Kronos member just to say thank in person, because my, being as an audience in the concert is not enough. I want to thank them in a person. And then, so I met them, and David Harrington asked me what did I do, and then I shared with him that I'm Vietnamese traditional artist and composer. And so after that, the next thing we know that we met almost every 2 weeks and discussed about music, and David shared the vast collection of Vietnamese traditional music that Kronos has, and some of the CD, I couldn't even find it in Vietnam, because the archive system in Vietnam is not that good.
Sure,
so
yeah.
The music's out. Mm-hmm. And Yeah.
So when you're working with the quartet, tell me, are you, is the nomenclature the same? Are you writing in the same way as Western music is written, or is it just blended in a way that it doesn't matter?
I was trained under the 6 different master artists for different music genres in Vietnam, but then I also graduated from the National Conservatory of Music, so I did learn the Western system of notation. So that gave me definitely the advantage how I can write what I hear into the system that readable and Western musician. So in that way, reading music and writing music is not a problem, but I just want to extend the question a little bit, is that when I start to work with Kronos, my music is really, really changed, because Kronos encourage me and empower me in a way that I bring out the best of my music, and the music that maybe no one else want to hear, but I bring it out because it's very private thought and very so deep that sometimes it's hard to share, but they encouraged me in a way that I can share it.
Mm. Your music will be featured on the final concert of the festival, featuring excerpts from your work, The Odyssey.
Yes.
From Vietnam to America. Tell us the storyline of The Odyssey.
You know, since I moved to the United States in 2001, I actually was born and grew up in north of Vietnam. But then when I moved to the U.S., 99% of my friends actually are from the south of Vietnam. And after dinner, after gathering, we all talk about, we end up talking about how we all came here as a refugee, and you know how we can come to America. And my friends share experience and you know heartfelt stories, their own experience, and it sound like it's really sound like fiction to me, because you know they would came with a small little boat with only 7 meters long, 3 to 4 meters wide, and would have several hundred people.
Wow.
Sit in the boat.
And how long of a journey would this be? Where would it be going from Vietnam to where?
Normally, all the Vietnamese boat people try to head out to the open sea, you know, international water, and hope that some bigger boat pick them up, but the lucky boat would have about like 3 days on sea, but that number is very, very small. Most of the boats just floating, either engine die or they, you know, pirate or storm, and eventually they got rescued, but many hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese die. So my friends, I have friends that floating on the sea for 30 days, just from Vietnam to Hong Kong.
Wow.
And, it can be months on the sea with no food and water, and then people have to do cannibalism and all of that to survive. So it's very heartfelt, and family member lost each other. Either they die on sea, or pirate took the wives away or daughters.
Wow.
Away. Mm. It's just like fiction to me, but it's a real life experience.
Tell us about your own family.
My family, I was born in north of Vietnam, and my father during the Vietnam War, but in Vietnam we call American War. So my father had to enlist to the Northern Army because he didn't have any choice. He was the only one, only man in the family. So whether or not he had to do it, or else the family considered as a defected. But he got away by enlist as a musician, and he played guitar, but he played terrible guitar at the time. But he got it away, got away with that. And then so he, after the war, he came back and he took his first formal training of music at the National Academy of Music at the time they opened. And after that, he worked for National Theater, and I was born after that. And, you know, you already know that I studied, study instruments since I was 4 years old, other instrument, traditional instrument. And then so in 1995, there was the first time they were between the America and Vietnamese, American and Vietnamese governments reestablished the relationship after 20 years of embargo. And I was selected as one of the performers to the U.S. to perform, because the policy of Vietnam is that whenever they start a new relationship, the first group of people or the first delegation they send would be artists, because they want to send us as a peace message. So I came here for 1 month tour, and then during that time I met a volunteer driver for the organization who 5 years after that became my husband. So I moved here.
Nice.
But his family is actually from south of Vietnam. His family had to go through a lot of up and downs after the war, because his father was just a radio technician in the army. But after the war, he had to go to correctional camp. And they are also Vietnamese, Chinese Vietnamese. So in 1979, another wave that hit his family was, the conflict between Vietnam and China borders. So the family got another turn upside down for their life. So eventually they decided to escape Vietnam. But then their boat was caught. So his father had to go to jail for this time, because he registered the boat under his name.
Wow.
Yeah, but then after he got out, the family was sponsored by other family member in the U.S., so they moved here in 1987.
Well, that's good. Oh, my. Talking with Van Anvo, who's featured in the final concert of the Kronos Festival 2017. Van An, you brought this beautiful instrument with you.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could tell us about it. I'll try to describe it to our listeners. It's a little bit over a meter long by maybe a foot wide. I'm reminded of a Japanese koto. Is it the same sort of family of instrument or sound?
Yes, this is a Vietnamese dan chang.
Dan chang.
Yeah, it is the same family with Japanese koto or Chinese guzheng.
So how many strings are on it here?
I brought in this one with 19 strings, but the original one only has 16 strings.
And I see these triangular frets that are going to change the pitch of the instrument that are adjustable, I imagine?
Yes, it is.
About looks like a dozen or so of those, easy, maybe more. Could you play us something? What would you like to play?
I just want to play an excerpt again, because I don't think that we have a time. But my original composition, yes. So thank you.
original composition by Van An Vo, performing on an instrument that she'll be performing with the Kronos Quartet in the final concert of the Kronos Quartet Festival 2017. Absolutely beautiful sound. What is the name of the instrument again?
Dan Chang.
Dan Chang.
Yes.
Beautiful sound. And wonderfully played, my gosh. So did you write the string, the quartet arrangements, or did you work with the quartet to make them happen?
Yeah, I wrote all the music and do all the arrangement for them.
That'll be heard on the final concert Saturday evening at 7:30, on which you'll hear excerpts from Van An's The Odyssey, the title theme of the full concert, which will also feature the world premiere of Joan Jean Renault's Knock and Tanya Tagak's excerpt from Sivunitini, which is arranged by Jacob Garchik. Yes, that Garchik, Leah Garchik's son, Jacob, a wonderful arranger and musician in his own right. Van An, I wish you wonderful performances and a fruitful collaboration with the Kronos, and we look forward to those concerts.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. This year's festival highlights in particular the ingenious and arresting work of Iranian composer Sabah Amanikia, who we heard as I was introducing this segment. He serves as the festival's artist in residence. The concert of his music Saturday afternoon is sold out, but his music will also be heard in the final concert Saturday evening at 7:30, which will also have Van An's excerpts from The Odyssey. Tonight's opening concert at SF Jazz at 7:30 is titled The Sun Rises. Kronos Quartet will be with Masa Vadat, the San Francisco Girls Chorus, and students from the Ruth Asawa San Francisco School of the Arts. More information about the entire festival at kronosquartet.org. Good afternoon, I'm David LaTulipe, and welcoming more musicians to the open-air microphones, Noche Flamenca. You'll hear a little bit more about the Opera House goings-on and the San Francisco Ballet's opening seasons of Program 1 and 2 shortly. And Peter Robinson will have some highlights from the mostly British film festival before the hour's out. Noche Flamenca, one of the most authentic flamenco companies in the world today, is presenting an evening-length work, Antígona, at Z-Space from February 4th until the 25th. In Antígona, Noche Flamenca transforms the classic play into a virtuoso flamenco masterpiece co-created by the ensemble's artistic director, Martin Santangelo, in collaboration with his wife and principal dancer, Soledad Barrio, who plays the title role. Martin joins me in studio along with guitarist Eugenio Iglesias and singer Manuel Gago. Welcome to Open Air.
Hi, and also another guitarist came along.
Oh, great.
They don't like to be separated. Salvador.
Salvador, welcome.
Salva de Maria.
And I'm sorry, did I say your name correctly, Eugenio?
Eugenio.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. So, Martin, I understand this flamenco version of the Antigone story was inspired by a more traditional staging of the play that you saw.
I read a Bertolt Brecht's version of Judith Molina's translation of Bertolt Brecht's Antigona, which wasn't the staging, it was the actual text, which was not modernized, but made to make sense for us today.
How did the parallels happen between the traditional Greek and happenings in Spain?
Well, the incident that inspired me to do it was the majority of a lot of Spaniards asked Judge Garzón, who is an incredible judge, he's a hero, a human rights judge from Spain, to allow them the excavation in burial sites during the Franco regime, the fascist regime, to excavate the bodies, do DNA samples, and then to rebury their loved ones. It was not a political venture. It was just a humanitarian venture. And the hardcore, a lot of people in Spain said no. A lot of people, very powerful people, they ousted the judge from Spain. He can no longer practice in Spain, which was a gigantic global fiasco. And it reminded me exactly of the story of Antigona. So, unfortunately, we're doing it again, unfortunately. We're doing it. There's so many productions of Antigona. It's one of the I think it's the most produced play in the world in our history.
Mm-hmm. Well, for those of us who are rusty on our Greek mythology, yeah. Maybe you can encapsulate the Antigone story for us.
It's a in a nutshell. It's that when we become dictators, we lose our humanity. That's what the play screams out. That's what it's about.
Boy, as if history's not repeating itself, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately,
just with our last segment as well, the boat people and our isolationists.
Well, I heard an Iranian musician, we were talking today about, what if they, there's so many unbelievable musicians that have just lost years of touring, which is just extraordinary. Yeah, we were talking about what if they were contracted out and all of a sudden I said, sorry, the three-month tour is not happening, For producers, for theaters, for publicists, for artists, for technicians. I mean, it's just, it's astounding. Mm. And then, bottom line, to share a culture's art form, which is great and needed, and it's an education, and it's absolutely necessary.
Right, right. We might be in for some rough times here, but
yeah.
The culture will help us through for sure.
Absolutely.
Now, this seems to be a very busy time period, month of January, February for flamenco. A couple of weeks ago, we had on the great Yaelisa. Next week, Nina Menendez, artistic director of the 12th annual Bay Area Flamenco Festival, will tell us about that festival. Is this time of year particularly ripe, usually, for flamenco, or is it just a coincidence?
I have no idea. Well, no idea.
We're all the better for it, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, all the better. More flamenco, better.
We've got some time for about a 5-minute excerpt of some music if we're able to do something.
Great.
Live in studio.
¿Qué queréis hacer? Lo que queréis.
Un poquito de Soleá por Bulerías.
They're going to sing and play Soleá por Bulerías.
They pick up pretty well with the mics.
Yeah.
Great.
Aquí recoge bien.
I'll add a little bit of Carnegie Hall for you, too.
Genio, Salva y Pepe. Son pedazo de artistas. They're incredible artists, and they're going to sing and play.
Great.
Salve. También. Salva, compadre. Toca puro. Ay, 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 ya, 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 ya. Sé que la agua pena mata y yo digo de que no. Y yo digo de que no. Si la pena matará, ay, ya muerto yo. Que si la pena matará, ay, ya muerto yo. Dale, yo también. Reinaba la alegría y en Arcala no reinaba la alegría porque sabíamos el duitano ay Manolito de María
porque sabíamos el tu ítalo, ay, Manolito de María. Yo te estoy queriendo a ti. Que yo te estoy queriendo a ti. Ay, que con la misma violencia que llevaba al ferrocarril. Ay, que con la misma violencia que llevaba al ferrocarril.
Olé, bravo. Bravo, tutti bravo, amigos. Wow, that's amazing.
Still the morning for them.
Pepe Jimenez, Salva de Maria, and Eugenia Iglesias, part of Noche Flamenca's telling of the Antigone story, Saturday through the 25th at Z Space, the main stage, 450 Florida Street here in San Francisco. More information at zspace.org. Director, artistic director Martin Sanangelo, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you to Eugenio Salva and Pepe. You guys are unbelievable. This is extraordinary. Thank you.
And for bringing this wonderful story in its unique way to Z-Space. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Peter Robinson back with us in studio to talk about the Mostly British Film Festival and songs that tell a story. Here's one that tells a great story.
Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're
great story there, Peter.
Okay, indeed, David. Good to be here. And the reason we're listening to Nat King Cole singing Mona Lisa, in fact, this is the title of the film noir evening at the Mostly British Film Festival. So the movie is called Mona Lisa. It stars Bob Hoskins and Michael Caine, and it's directed by Neil Jordan. The film noir evening, which I'll come to in a second, is on the second evening, that's Friday, February the 17th, at the Vogue Cinema. Now, just a quick word about the Mostly British Film Festival. There are over 25 different movies, and the reason it's called Mostly British is that these are movies from Ireland, from Australia, from India, Scotland, and of course from the UK. People have joked, do we need subtitles? Well, yes, some of the Scottish movies do need subtitles, and when they're translated in black and white below the screen, it may make you want to jump out of your pants. It's not a question of Donald, where's your trousers? It's much more crude than that. Anyhow, let's talk about Mona Lisa to start with. This is set very much in the gangster world that Bob Hoskins is so much a favorite player of. He plays a cab driver, and he has to drive around a black hooker who is under partial control of Michael Caine. So it's set in some of the seedier parts of London, the nightclubs in Soho, King's Cross, and it's a dramatic story about, I want to say affection and betrayal, but it's also a story about tales, because in between the cab rides and the friends, Bob Hoskins gets up to talking about little moments in his life. He's a sentimental but tough character, and of course the story is film noir, so it has that haunting quality, and that is why I think the Nat King Cole song, Mona Lisa, the girl with the mystery smile, is so much a part of what this film comes to be. Now, when they have a film noir evening, they usually use two. The second is called A Patch of Fog. It's not been released in this country until now. It's set in Belfast and is very much the story of blackmail and deception. So what kicks off the actual opening evening at the Mostly British Film Festival? And that is on the 16th of February, begins at 7:30, and we have a guest star, Bill Nighy. People may well remember him. The last movie I reviewed that he was in was called The Exotic Marigold Hotel, which was a wonderful story about a group of British old age pensioners seeing a brochure for a hotel in India, and they arrive, and of course it is dilapidated and run down. But the most charming character in the movie, apart from Bill Nighy himself, is the Indian hotelier, and he has that famous line, "Everything is all right in the end, and if it's not all right, then it's not the end." And with that, the guest push out a smile. So the opening film is called The Finest, and it actually means The Finest, and it's a look at filmmaking. So for people who are movie buffs and want to see the stories behind films, how they get put together, this is really an enjoyable piece. It starts off with wartime movies in Britain, particularly after the Dunkirk raid and the Dunkirk retreat. And Bill Nighy, who appears in the movie, is going to be there that particular evening to talk about it.
Wonderful musical offerings, too, in the Mostly British Film Festival this year, Peter, especially if you're a Beatles fan. Nowhere Boy, about the early life of John Lennon, between his legendary mother and his formidable aunt. You can see that on February 18th. And a screening of A Hard Day's Night, the classic Beatles film, on the 18th as well. Again, all things British for the film festival, mostlybritish.org.
Yeah, and those are introduced by a local author, Tony Broadbent, who has written a sort of guide to Beatlemania. And one of the other screenings on that particular day, the one you've just mentioned, which is February the 18th, is Backbeat, which is a chronicle of the early days of the Beatles in Hamburg, when they were still sort of climbing up to the ladder to fame. And in those days, art students John Lennon and Stuart Sutcliffe were very much part of the scene, and I think it kind of puts into focus how in those early days the Beatles came to be. So that is another good example of the diversity of what you see at this film festival. There are a couple of Irish movies. One is called Twice Shy, which is very much a coming-of-age story. There are movies from Australia, and one of the classics that they're going to be running is Adam and Eve, but there are three different movies from Australia. And then there are some movies from India. So when we say mostly British, it's a kind of full range of how things go. And two other ones I'd like to mention. One is A Sense of Ending, which was based on a Julian Barnes novel, a dramatic story about memory, starring Charlotte Rampling. And then at the very end of the festival, which finishes on the 23rd of February, they're going to be rescreening the 1974 of Murder on the Orient Express. And that has got a cast of thousands. Michael York, Sean Connery, Richard Widmark, Ingrid Bergman, Lauren Bacall. It is that classic one. And one of the people who was involved in that, Anne Coates, is going to be there talking about how that got made. So this is all happening at the Vogue Theatre, which is at 3290 Sacramento Street. And you can reach and find out more with mostlybritish.org. A full variety of films running the whole week, starting on the Thursday at the opening night at the Vogue Theatre on February the 16th. And then a small event, but a fun event, happening at Sausalito Library. It's called Songs That Tell a Story. And this is a series of video cuts, musical performances that look at everything from ballads, great Irish ballads, Scottish ballads, and then moves into the American Songbook, with people like Cole Porter, but also protest music, Country Joe Fish and Joan Baez, Don't Think Twice, Bob Dylan. A really exciting musical soiree for people who want to see how storytelling becomes an integral part of music. And the best number to reach for that is area code 415-381-6671. I'm going to repeat that. This is for Songs That Tell a Story. It's at the end of February, February the 23rd, at the Sausalito Library. And if you want a ticket for that or more information, call 415-381-6671. So a full range of happenings this February, and kicking off with the Mostly British Film Festival and finishing in Sausalito with Songs That Tell a Story.
Thanks so much, Peter. We'll see you again, and yeah, as always, a pleasure talking with you.
Good to be here.
Other wonderful cultural events happening this week, including the San Francisco Ballet's programs 1 and 2, now in rotation, which will include some of the music you're hearing in the background, the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto. Fun Home at the Curran. This is a moving, funny musical based on the autobiographical novel by Alison Bechdel, known to many as the cartoonist who draws the Dykes to Watch Out For cartoon. And it is the showcase work for the grand reopening of the Curran, which has undergone a multi-million dollar makeover under the loving supervision of Carol Shorenstein Hayes. Fun Home's Tony-winning music is by Janine Tesori, with a book and lyrics by Lisa Krohn. Tesori wrote the music for Caroline, or Change, and for Tony Kushner's adaptation of Mother Courage. Fantastic cast and a fascinating story, sfcurran.com for more information. Well, I mentioned that San Francisco Ballet's programs 1 and 2 are now in rotation at the War Memorial Opera House. I caught program 2 last night, which included some beautiful choreography by Alexei Ratmansky, set to selected keyboard sonatas of Domenico Scarlatti, performed by Mongunchimeg Buriad, and the world premiere of choreographer Yuri Posikov's Optimistic Tragedy, which has a full orchestral score by Russian composer Ilya Demutsky, who, among his other degrees from Russian schools of note, was a recent Fulbright scholar and received a master's degree in composition from the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where he studied with composer and friend David Conte. Program 1's musical highlights include Mozart's Haffner Symphony, No. 35, Kerschel 385, with choreography by the San Francisco Ballet's artistic director, Helgi Thomason, and had its premiere back in 1991 for a special Mozart bicentennial celebration. Also on Program 1, the world premiere commission by the San Francisco Ballet of Fragile Vessels, with music from Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto, which we're hearing in the background, and choreography and scenic design, respectively, by identical twin Czech brothers, Jiri and Otto Bubenicek, both with fine dancing careers as well. And once again, Mongunchimeg Buriad will be piano soloist for Program 1. Closing the Program 1 is Justin Peck's In the Countenance of Kings. It's a bold new work set to a glorious score by indie crossover artist Sufjan Stevens, who was the surprise smash success of the 2016 repertory season. In 2 weeks' time, I'll have as my guests here in studio the conductor of the San Francisco Ballet Orchestra, Martin West, and composer Lowell Lieberman, who wrote the score for the big event that is the ballet's Program 3, Frankenstein. I had the great pleasure of performing Lowell Lieberman's flute concerto a few years back with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. You'll really enjoy his music, I'm sure. Information for all of the upcoming San Francisco Ballet performances at sfballet.com.
www.civiccenter.org. Also on the Civic Center front, conductor laureate of the San Francisco Symphony, Herbert Blomstedt, is back for performances of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony with the San Francisco Symphony Chorus and Soloists. Performances are tonight and tomorrow at 8, Sunday at 2. And in between those concerts, this Saturday at 4 p.m., the symphony welcomes the Year of the Rooster with a Lunar New Year concert and celebration at Davies Symphony Hall. Guest conductor Mian Chen will lead the symphony with a special guest soloist, Tang Jun Kiao, performing the Dizi, a Chinese bamboo flute. On Saturday, you're encouraged to arrive at around 3 o'clock or so for an experience that will be activity-filled with a reception and ancient instruments being demonstrated and able to play, lucky red envelopes, some treats, and other entertainment. Tickets and information for all of that at sfsymphony.org. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing Open Air, and special thanks to Ashley Ann Krigbaum for today's herding of guests as Niels is out and about on vacation. Join me next week for Open Air, where more flamenco will be on the program. Nina Menendez of the Bay Area Flamenco Fest will tell us about this year's festival. Nancy Karp and dancers about their show. You'll hear from singer Kirk Doherty about the San Jose Opera's production of Silent Night. That all ahead next week on Open Air. Do stay tuned next week, and a reminder that our shows are archived at kalw.org. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 featured in the San Francisco Ballet's Program 1, SF Ballet, for more information. sfballet.org, that is. An hour of news from the BBC is coming up next here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco, recorded an hour earlier for broadcast at this time.
It's 21 hours GMT, 11 at night in Bucharest, and 1 p.m. on America's West Coast. Welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. I'm Paul Henley. Coming up, the latest from Romania, where huge crowds are on the streets of the capital protesting against the government's plans to decriminalize some forms of political corruption.
Misused of public budget, this means a poor quality of public services, and it affects directly our lives.
There are fears that Israel could be drawn into the conflict in Syria as new battle lines are drawn.
There's a potential here, a dangerous potential, for a long border from the Mediterranean across Lebanon and Syria with Hezbollah and Iran at very close quarters with Israel.
And how Dame Vera Lynn, the British wartime forces sweetheart, could top the music charts again, aged 100. That's all after the news.